Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Necesitamos incluir cada persona en el éxito de esta economía.
La situación ahora es inaceptable.
Y estoy postulando por presidente de los Estados Unidos.
Democratic presidential candidates Beto O'Rourke, Cory Booker, and Julian Castro speaking Spanish at the first round of primary debates last month. Some might call this an effective political strategy. Others call it hispandering.
It felt a little bit like hispandering to me.
This term hispandering has been floating around the internet a lot this week.
What some would call hispandering.
Either way, we can't ignore the growth of the Latino population in the United States. There are nearly 60 million Latinos in the country, an all-time high, according to the latest numbers from the Pew Research Center. And while the rate of growth has slowed, Latinos still accounted for more than half the total population increase in the U.S. between 2008 and 2018. So today on The Takeaway, we're breaking down what this population growth looks like and whether it will actually translate to political power. To help me answer that question, I have Mark Hugo Lopez, Director of Global Migration and Demography Research at Pew. Great to have you back on the show, Mark.
Thank you.
Also with us is Clarissa Martinez, the Deputy Vice President at Unidos US, a Latino civil rights organization. Thanks for being with us, Clarissa.
Thank you.
So, Mark, before we get into specific numbers, let's talk about terminology here. In the Pew report, we're talking about, it uses the terms Hispanic and Latino. Can you tell us a little bit about the decision behind that?
Yes, well, different parts of the Hispanic population prefer different terms. So when you ask, for example, in a survey, which term do you prefer to use, Hispanic, Latino, or do you have no preference? We find that actually half of Hispanic adults tell us they have no preference. Hispanic is usually preferred 2-1 among those who do express a preference. So we're trying to represent a population that has roots in Latin America and in Spain with these terms that some people prefer one or the other, but we try to use them interchangeably.
So I remember a couple years ago when we were reporting on this, the big number was 50 million Latinos, and now we're almost at 60 million Latinos, which is 11 million more Latinos in the U.S. since 2008. Who are we talking about, Mark? Are we native-born Latinos? Are these immigrants? What populations are we talking about?
Well, both the population of U.S.-born Hispanics and the population of immigrants from Latin America and Spain have grown in the United States, but most of that growth has come from births in the U.S. So it is now births to Hispanic parents that are driving population numbers for this group.
And we also see that there's somewhat of a decline in terms of population growth, or we're sort of leveling out here. What's leading to that?
Yeah, that's actually a story that's been emerging over the course of the last decade, and it's actually a result of two different trends. The first trend is the slowdown in immigration. Since the Great Recession, we've seen fewer and fewer immigrants coming from Latin America, largely Mexico driving most of those numbers, but also, even though there have been some increases in the number of people coming from places like Central America or Venezuela or Cuba in the last decade, for the most part, it has been a decline in the number of Mexicans arriving that's driven that decline in new immigrant arrivals from Latin America. At the same time, even though births do drive Hispanic population growth in the U.S., we've also seen a decline in the fertility rate among Hispanic women. So while it tends to be a little bit higher than it is for other groups of Americans, the fertility rate for U.S. Hispanic women is now almost what it is for other groups of Americans.
Clarissa, I want to bring you in here. We're heading into a pretty contentious political election in 2020. It's been a really interesting political season so far, to say the least. Let's talk about turnout for Latinos. It always seems to be an issue, although in 2018, there was a different Pew study for the midterms that found that more than a quarter of the Latinos who showed up to the polls said they were voting in a midterm for the first time. What do you think galvanized Latino voters in that election?
We know that Latinos are seeing the environment around them become very threatening in many ways. And we are seeing that now as we go into this weekend. It seems that the president, whenever he feels threatened or there is a potential for news that he doesn't like to come out, he comes after the Latino or the immigrant community. So he's putting raids back on the table this weekend. But that's what's happening in these couple of years. The reality is that at Unidos US, and we're a civil rights organization that's been around for now 50 years, I feel that the story of the Latino vote and the understanding of this electorate and how to mobilize it or engage it, we have been putting that playbook out for a long time. But in many ways, you have candidates and campaigns that are not necessarily doing their homework in reaching out to this community and simply take it for granted and or ignore it. So some of that has been changing. Two notable ways, in addition to the growth of the community, which continues to feed a very fast growth in the electorate that is Latino, we also have seen an emergence of more community and nonpartisan efforts to drive up voter registration, since there is very little investment in voter registration. And also this last year, going specifically to your question, we also saw a lot more campaigns and local efforts to reach out and introduce themselves to these voters. So that, in addition to the concerns that Latinos have, is feeding into that we saw last year, where nearly 20 districts were a factor in determining who controls the House were decided by Latino voters.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because in 2016, Hillary Clinton got about 66% of the Latino vote. In the midterm elections in 2018, Democrats won 69% of the Latino vote. Are Democrats assuming that they have the Latino vote based on those numbers, Clarissa?
I think they have, and they have done that for a long time. Now, anybody who knows elections knows that it's not just about percentages, it's also about numbers, right? And so Latinos, traditionally, they are not democratically oriented by genetics or anything like that. But, you know, more or less, Latinos tended to have an affinity towards Democrats, 2-1 compared to Republicans. We are seeing that change right now. So we just released a poll of Latino voters in this last month, where rather than ask Latinos how they feel about the 300, you know, primary candidates, many of whom are strangers, we ask them what they want to see in a presidential candidate. And one of the top characteristics for Latinos is somebody who will unify the country. So that probably is no surprise. Latinos are not alone in feeling not only that there's a lot of divide and conquer politics, but frankly, they're also finding themselves as the target or the pawn in that narrative. Even though, as Mark was saying, the growth of the Latino community shows that 8 out of 10 Latinos in this country are United States citizens. Yet the rhetoric that Latinos are seeing right now oftentimes leads to an erosion of civil rights, civil liberties, and an increase in discrimination.
I want to also ask you, Mark, about where Latinos are going, where they're settling, the demographic shifts that we're seeing. Because, you know, 50 years ago or even more, I think a lot of the migration patterns were essentially headed to Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, Miami. That's changing, right?
So we have seen over the last 20, 30 years a dispersion of the Hispanic population across the country. So now you look in all parts of the country, there is some Hispanic presence in just about every county. And what this really speaks to is this speaks to both how quickly this population has grown and how large this population is. 60 million people makes up about 18% of the U.S. population. But it's important to note that still California, Texas, Florida, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, these are the states that generally still have the most Hispanics and the largest part of the Hispanic population. However, we have seen growth in places like the South over the last 20 years, if not more. And also now growth in places like Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota. Those are some of the fastest growing Hispanic populations, admittedly starting from a small base. But this does reflect some of the economic changes happening, for example, in North Dakota, that's attracting not only Hispanic workers, but other workers as well. And Hispanics are part of that broader story of population growth there.
And Clarissa, I want to ask you to weigh in on that, because what does that look like for political strategy here? I mean, once we see this population expanding, like Mark said, to places like Montana, North Dakota, where the numbers may not be as large as they are in New York and New Jersey and Los Angeles, but there's still a shift happening there. Are we to assume that that will translate to votes?
Yes, it will translate into votes. The question is, how many votes, right? And what I mean by that is we at Unidos US do a lot of voter registration, nonpartisan. We don't care what party people are going to support in the election, but we want to make sure that eligible Americans are able to vote, and particularly Latinos, many of whom, as Mark noted from the research, every cycle will be first-time voters. They need more information. They need more exposure to the system. I would say that where it comes to the candidates, Latinos, like any other voter, want to see three basic things. They believe that candidates matter, that those candidates' positions matter, and that meaningful outreach is essential. We're seeing some changes in that, but it certainly still has a lot of room for improvement. And I bet you that in the places where Latinos are a very small part of those communities, that outreach can potentially be more anemic. But one of the takeaways here, to borrow from the name of the show,
we'll
is
take
that,
it.
Yeah, it's that, you know, a lot of these bits of information that are coming out are not necessarily new, right? As Mark was saying, these are trends from the last 30 years or so. I bet many of your listeners are not even that old. So they've been happening for a while. One of the takeaways, perhaps, is building on what we know in those trends is that for anyone who cares about improving educational outcomes, advancing an economy that works for working class families, healthy communities, we know access to, you know, the cost of healthcare is a huge concern, humane immigration policies, among other similar areas, for anybody who cares about those things, the growth of the Latino electorate should be a welcome development, because even though we're not a monolith, those are the issues that drive the majority of the voters in this community.
Clarissa Martinez is Deputy Vice President at Unidos US, and Mark Hugo Lopez is Director of Global Migration and Demography Research at the Pew Research Center. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.